Let's open it up for questions. Who's got a question for Salvatore? Because it's not often that we get
Sal.
People of this.
You can call me Sal. Your right pal on, Sal.
Can I ask a question?
Feel free, Melanie.
Well, okay. I didn't raise my hand. So tranches, deal toy, and what was the third thing?
Deadlines.
Deadlines. Okay.
You talked about it. If you ever get it, I know I'm not compelling you to get a tattoo, but if you ever get a tattoo on your left sleeve, it would say deadline all deals.
Yeah, I feel that.
It's the difference between an institutional person and a novice are deadlines.
Okay. So I just ordered the book, the red book.
Oh, good.
And the download. So I'm going to read those. But so I'm aspiring. I have a very small fund. I'm about to launch a very large fund with some partners with a really large database here in Austin. So I'll be leaning on their relationships to really get it going. I'm looking, and it's female managed, female founded with the men who support us, right? So I'm looking for an advisor fund, female fund manager that could be an advisor. Where do you suggest?
Oh, wow. I have a very good friend. Okay. Because you bought the book, I'll mention this to you. Okay. She runs a mez fund in New York. She's a rock star. And her name is Kathy Corton. Okay. Kathy Corton, Corton. She and her partner, Sam, run a mez fund. I don't expect you to know what that is. However, we do have a real estate workshop coming up in June. If you're on my email list, you'll get a notification for that. And we go over all that stuff. She would be the person for you. She would be perfect for you. Her and Sam Miller. Yeah. Look them up on LinkedIn and say, Sal Buscemi suggested I speak to you on a Zoom regarding what I'm trying to accomplish here. I'm looking for women. And she is beloved. I mean, beloved. And we were actually raising money for her at one point, but then the whole pandemic happened and we would still do a deal with her, but we're not ready for real estate yet. And she knows that. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good stuff.
No questions?
I have a bazillion questions, but someone else should
go ahead, Melanie. Keep it going.
Melanie, why not? I mean, nobody else is going to speak up.
Well, I was going to ask if you do like one-on-one consultations because I have so many questions, but y'all.
I do. If you go to salvatorebuscemi.com, you go there, it's called Work with Sal, and just fill that out and my assistant will get back to you on that.
Awesome. Because I'm new, I'm launching this big fund and I don't know what I don't know. So obviously I'm not institutional yet. I need to learn how to speak your language because it's going big in my mind and structuring the deal.
Yeah, I hope Kathy works with you. She is someone who I tremendously respect. Okay. She'll get it. Don't tell her like I'm going to give her a check because we're not ready yet. But just say I was on a Zoom about real estate and I was talking about funds and he said, she's like, oh, Sal, whatever. So she's great. She came out of Nomura and she runs Hillcrest. And she's just, she's just a legend. You cannot be more aligned with any other female in this business. What's her name? Melanie? Than her. Yeah, that I can think of. There's maybe one other person, but she's not fund level. She's more on like the agency side for debt. And you don't want that. That's garbage. I mean, not garbage, but that's not for you.
All right. Irish is back. Do you have a question, Irish?
Yes. What's happening, everybody?
Hey, welcome, Irish.
How close did you get to Boston being from New York?
We have about four portfolio companies up there that I have to see soon. And it'll probably be going up at some point in May. But I've not been to Boston in a couple of years, actually. We almost did a life science deal there a year ago before Christmas, but things just petered out. It was a life science real estate development out there. But no, I've not been to Boston in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, just curious because there's so much action going on the seaport, the waterfront, like a lot of
huge. Yeah. I know.
Life science labs. It's like crazy stuff.
It's like Foxconn. You live upstairs and you work in the lab downstairs. It's really what it is. They call it wet office.
Is that what it is? Wet office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if I get the audio book, am I going to be like listening as fast as you talk?
You can slow it down.
No, actually, he's a little slower than he's been talking today. I listened to both. He narrates the most recent one in Legacy. Or what is it called? Investing Legacy.
Investing Legacy, yeah. Investinglegacy.com.
And then the other one, it almost sounds like you, but it's not. So,
it's not. And I couldn't do it because I was busy launching this fund. And I was working with trying to get the Audible versions up and everything. But I got the one done that I wanted to because it was the non-academic book. It was for families actually that wanted to know who we were. And it was actually geared towards women because 70% of book buyers are women. And most guys do not read financial books. They just go on Instagram and Twitter and Reddit for their financial advice.
Wow. All right, cool. Selena, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. So I'm a physical book type of person. How can I get your book autographed by you? So let me
StavatorBuscemi.com/book. Books. StavatorBuscemi.com/books.
Cool. Do you have a few more minutes for questions, Sal?
Yeah, I'm here until 2:30. Go ahead. Woo-hoo. Burn it out.
All right,
I got
cool.
Nothing left.
We got some people raising hands now.
Oh, now everybody wants to raise hands. Okay. Now we're gonna get to it.
Okay, Bethany, what you got?
Hey, one time to see. Hey,
I know. Like
Sal, thanks so much for being here. Massive value for sure.
Thank you.
I don't even know. Okay, Melanie and I are two peas in a pod. So I don't even know where to start with all the questions. But I think one of the best ones is I agree wholeheartedly with you that wealthy people are more relational as opposed to transactional. And the challenge, I think, you would think in that respect that women would do a better job because women generally are more relational, but it's mostly men in this space. How can we as women kind of overcome that? What have you seen?
I'll tell you, you just got to be in the room. You just got to be in the room. I know women. Kathy Corton does not let a male dominated industry get in her way. Just put on the heels and go to the conferences. Go. You are in a prime time right now because everybody's focused on emerging women, minority owned funds. And if you get the critical mass, then you start getting like the Common Fund, the New York Teachers, where they have to slice off a part of it to you. If I was raising a fund, I would, and I was going to these state pension funds, even with my pedigree and track record, I would still be passed over because they have to go to women like you. Does that make sense?
How about that?
So wear the clothes. Seriously, you are a salesman. You always have to be out there. Whatever this is, and my boss at Goldman Sachs told me this. When it was like an old partner, they wheeled him out. During our interaction, he goes, "I don't care if you're in fixed income, investment banking, back office, whatever. You're in sales. You're always selling, and that cross selling is why you get $500,000 bonuses, right?" Oh, what? Oh, you want to talk to Dave in DCM? Hold on a second. And it's like everything is, it's the sales. And if you spend a disproportionate amount of your time building relationships, Bethany, I guarantee you your fundraising will be a lot easier because everything else will just be like, well, we'll just have to put it together.
Don't be shy.
So the next question then is, how would you encourage capital raisers to go meet folks like that? So for instance, many times we've reached out to family offices and they're very closed doored.
Yeah. Why would they want to talk to you, Bethany?
Exactly.
No, I'm being honest with you. Why would I want to talk to you? Here's what you have to do. There's a barrier to entry in everything today. And I will tell you that we have spent and we have budgeted for this year, probably about $100,000 just in association fees to go to places like Fana Rose over here in Miami Beach. It's like a hot hotel, or the Metropolitan Club, or IMN conferences and stuff. You have to go to, even if you can't afford to go, just go and show up at the bar. You're a woman. I mean, I'm being honest with you. But, I used to crash the mortgage bankers conference when I needed to, material to buy when I had my first fund. I had to make relationships with people to sell me this stuff. They're like, why would I want to work with you? I had to go there and talk to them and meet them and just talk to them. The more you talk to these people, the more they're going to work with you. Nobody will ever give you their money without spending their time with you first. And what you're doing right now, ladies and gentlemen, in fundraising is the highest order of sales in the world. You're asking people to part with part of their life savings. And when you get that around your head, you have an entirely different outlook and reformatting of your mentality. Does that make sense? You're going to have to write the ticket to go, or you're just going to have to loiter like I do. Really? I mean, where do you live?
I know where they're hanging out afterwards and be there.
Yeah. Where are you located?
Well, technically I'm 100% remote now. So I'm primarily from the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. So there's all sorts of conferences you can sort of go to in Seattle. Or are you in Yakima? Like what's Pacific Northwest?
Oh, no, Seattle. Yeah. That's Seattle's okay. Home area.
All right. So Seattle, that's a big city. There's a lot of conferences there. San Francisco, I don't know if they have a lot of conferences there. but you're a quick flight in an overnight hotel, you know, to go to LA or Newport Beach to go to some of these family offices. And you know what? I'll just give you one that you can go to if you want. Go to ivyfone.com, ivyfone.com. You know, he'll charge you to go, but you're going to meet real families there and real people. But nothing's free. If it's free and the low barrier to entry is there, why? I mean, it's like sports ownership. If anybody can buy it, what's the glory of it?
Right. Hmm. Exactly.
Don't cheap out on that. Don't cheap out on that, please. You know, I'm not saying you to blow a huge budget. But what I'm saying is you got to be, maybe, I don't know if Melanie's your partner or not, but maybe you go as partners in crime and you're like, hey, let's share a hotel. There's a IMN, there's a family office conference here in LA. And if you follow those things around, then you're going to find a lot of, you know, you're going to find a lot of people, but you have to go to them. They're not going to come to you. And especially I get hit on like a hot girl on Instagram all the time on LinkedIn, because people are like, hey, I got a deal. I'm sure you do. Everybody does, right? Right. I mean, but they're all garbage because I don't trust the circles they come from. One guy over here in Miami made me buy coffee for him. He was selling a $300,000 electric boat. And he was, the pitch book was great, but it had no depth. And for example, he was saying like the world addressable market for people that don't own a boat. I'm like, there are people that never afford to own a boat. There are people who make $2 a day in Africa who will never be able to buy a boat. Like, so you see what I'm saying? Like, you're not dealing with real people here. So you're going to be dealing with real people, but that's contingent upon how much that you pay, you know, and that's really, it really is today the way it is.
Right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Lynn, what you got, my man?
Yeah, thanks, Sal. This is great.
Thank you.
You kind of answered most of the questions so far. It was really, I'm a year and a half in or less into capital raising and where the best place to go to find investors. I think you kind of answered that with a lot of conferences.
There's a lot of family office conferences around. It's a buzzword today. You got to be careful because family office is also synonymous with, you know, broker dealer. But if you go to these conferences, especially like locally, you know, there's, you know, I know one of my partners moved to Grand Rapids and there's like a Harvard Yale club that he goes to all the time. And he meets people there, but it's really meeting people. I used to be on the board of the YMCA for Chinatown, for the board of advisors for the Chinatown YMCA, met a lot of very wealthy Chinese families there. You know, those are the things that you want to do, is to have more of an outward facing thing. What you don't want to be is what I see a lot of people do is that, and I see this a lot with analytical people, especially people from data and systems, people who are in IT, and they get into real estate thinking that it's a bunch of houses in a box and it should work. And it's the numbers and the data, the figures are a lie. If it works, it works. However, what they forget is that there's a human component to this business, and you have to be out there talking to people. And also, even if you're doing it yourself and managing it yourself like an idiot, you know, if it's an apartment building, you have to make sure that you manage tenants, right? And it requires a tremendous amount of personality and dexterity to do that. And if you've been behind a computer coding all day your whole life, you really don't have that skill set.
Anything else, Lynn?
No, this is good.
Awesome.
Gives me a lot to chew on.
Samuel, what you got for Sal?
I'm always selling something. I mean, didn't Sal just say everyone's a seller, right?
You're always selling. You're always selling.
Always selling.
Yeah. So I'm weird, just like all the rest of us are, right, in our own way. But when we're raising money, for me, I'm an impact investor. We buy really nasty apartment complexes, do a complete renovation on them. Stuff that's like, you know, half occupied if it's 200 something units or really small.
But I'm already bored.
Yeah. You're already bored, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, if we're impact investing, we still want to hit 20, 30% returns, which we can. And multifamily, mobile home parks, all that stuff. And we have, you know, who's my target audience is different, right? I'm not just looking for folks who have money, but I'm looking for folks who want to make a social impact.
Well, no, you're looking for people that you're looking for two people there. They think they want social impact, but they're not going to write the check for social impact. You're probably looking at smaller balance investors who will get into this because they can see that there's an opportunity on the back end there. But I think what you should do is, if you've done this before or not, the word impact means different things to different people today. And I think you need to define that, you know, impact. Anybody says impact, there was Alex Rodriguez was like promoting like an apartment complex here a hotel that went busted or something. And he, you know, added the words ESG and everything to it.
Yeah,
what you have to do is you have to lead with a story on that. Okay. And you should say, this is a part of the area. And what I like to do is I like to, you know, tell it as if, you know, you're like, you know, what's his name? Ken Burns. Okay. You're discovering the project. You know, but think about it. If you, you know, if you're sitting there having a few beers or something, to be like, if you're explaining this to someone, you know, say back in, you know, wherever you are in 1953, this was a crown jewel where a lot of, you know, that was, you know, seen as being the, you know, crucial part of the city, is it housed a lot of people, especially those who came off the boat, whatever it is. Today, because of certain things, we see that we'll be able to make the same impact here by restoring it to its prior glory, but which much more of a meaningful and impactful theme. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
Should I find a different
career? Put a big 20 on the right-hand side, 20% return, you know, and all that. And that's it. And if you, and here's what you do. If it's a real project and if you can swing it, hire a kid with a drone to take a video of you just talking in front of the place. Really, I thought there's a video. If you buy the book and I get the receipt, what I'll do is I'll email you back. If you go to salvatorebuscemi.com, I'll email you back. There's a link to a video that I gave with our Class A and office investors. And, you know, they love me there. You know, like, they're like, wow, he's really there. Like, this is great. I go to people's homes in Salt Lake City and it's on a 70-inch TV and you see your fat head on a 70-inch TV. The more that you're able to appease the egos and increase the status of your investors, the better that'll be. That happens. I don't care if it's a jersey. I don't care if it's a fake Nobel Prize deal toy. That's really what the most important part is. And you need to put together a narrative with that. And it's very hard as investors because you're scrambling and everybody's saying they're doing due diligence and this and that. But you have to be spending a disproportionate amount of your time thinking about your investors and getting into their heads.
Got it. Yeah, we've worked with institutions, so we have institutional partners. That's been a big...
They like math. But, you know, if you're doing like a $5 million raise, that's not an institution, right?
Yeah. Right.
Hey, talk to us a little bit about the... So when I talk to lawyers, they all have different language. They remind me of college football coaches because they're doing the same plays, but they're calling it different things. So you mentioned a Series LLC, which is a structure for a fund. I've heard some people. No,
no, I'll tell you what it is. So there's a typical, you know, the conventional LPGP structure that's been around forever. And that's like your 80-20. And that's been around. And that's what most lawyers will do. Is that written in the Bible or the Constitution? No, of course it's not. And when I was raising money for my smaller balance venture fund called Danju Partners Encore Ventures, one of the things I did was I had to be different, but I also had to hit people in the wallet somehow without sacrificing my wallet. So how did I do that? And I came up with the idea that instead of this 80-20, Ruben, I say, look, for every dollar you give me, you have to make $2 back before I make a dime. And then after that, it's 50-50. And now all of a sudden you're like, ooh, this is interesting. Never heard this before. I'm going to make a lot of money. There's conviction there. I'm going to go spend due diligence on Sal's deal rather than on Irish Kevin's deal because, you know, he's giving me the same boilerplate docs. He just forwarded PDFs over to me. I don't want to read PDFs, but Ruben really took the time to really address my needs. And he shows a lot of conviction in his deal because he's willing to forego any payment until I get $2 back. Who else does that? Now, here's the filthy trick to it. Because I'm good at math, I know that I'm going to make much more money on the back end than I would if I was doing an 80-20. But to your investors, they don't perceive it that way because nobody likes to do math in America today. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Bethany, you should probably use that as like a hook for your investors too, right? So now you're woman and minority owned, and now you have a different fee structure. Now we're cooking with gas, guys. Now we're cooking with gas. And institutions love that shit too. Well, they're smart enough not to go for it, but institutions like that stuff too. They just make it more complicated on their side. And that's when you see like the promotes and the waterfalls and all that. When I start to see a waterfall that looks like a, you know, an NFL, like, you know, practice green, I get kind of scared. I like simple waterfalls. How am I doing? Good?
Well, I was very curious about the fund that owns multiple deals and then the investors can choose which deal they
participate. Why do you need that? That's I don't know what you should. Here's this perfect structure for you to do. Okay. We spent a lot of money to put this together, but anybody can put it together. There's two states that I know of that have what's called a master series LLC. And let's just say, for example, that we have apartment complex A, apartment complex B. Some investors want to go to apartment complex A. Some of them don't. Some of them want to go to apartment complex B. Some of them don't. That's fine. what the facility of the whole Master Series LLC is that it allows you basically to use the same EIN. There's two states that do this, and I'm not a lawyer, nor am I qualified to render any legal advice. One of which is Delaware and the other one is Nevada. We use Nevada. I'm not saying you have to use Nevada, but when you get big enough and you start having a lot of deal flow and you have a lot of money, what you're gonna have to make a name for yourself is how fast you can move, especially when you're funding sponsors, right? Which is what I do. I allocate capital. So if Albert and I need to set something up, for example, we could probably have a bank account set up within 24 to 48 hours as we need to in order to take capital in, okay? And as a fundraiser, you should always have your documents ready so that if anything comes that you can just go to the bank and get it done and get the money in quickly. You want to show that you've done your homework and the paperwork's done. It's not like, oh, I have to go to the bank first. You know, you never tell an investor that, right? You should have this all set up and everything so that, and you're making their job easy for them.
Great stuff.
I could sit here forever and listen to Sal.
He's good.
You'd have to buy me a beer, though. All right.
How about some Baileys?
I like Baileys. Yeah. All right. There you go. All right. High calorie, but all right. Okay. I'm sort of on a budget. I'm sort of on a diet, but okay.
Is there a business reason why you moved to Miami?
Yeah, there is. I'll tell you what it is. I'm originally from New York. Love New York. I was living in Las Vegas for 15 years. Recently got divorced. And I moved to Miami because I had a lot of friends during that time that I left New York, all moved to Miami. And there's a great infrastructure here of a lot of very wealthy people between here and Palm Beach, who I know, but I never really had a beachhead here. And I can tell you that there's no shortage of very wealthy people here, or what's the word I'm looking for, or social events going on every night where I'm meeting someone. So I actually had to change my life. I had a very sleepy life in Vegas, but now I wake up early in the morning, I work out, I do all my writing, I do all my calls. Around 3 o'clock, if I have plans at night, what I'll do is I'll just shut my eyes for like an hour, wake up, go get a cappuccino downstairs with the little Cuban lady in my apartment complex down there. And then I just, I'll just work on some other stuff. And then dinner start at like 6, and then I'm out until like, 10. I don't drink, or I'll have like a 3-drink limit or something like that. Only because, I have to use my brain the next day. And I just, I don't want to be slow and sluggish because next night is rinse, wash, repeat. But those people come on to my newsletters, they invest and they, buy books and everything like that. And that's really what it is. I almost moved to Austin. I did not, thankfully, but that doesn't have the same vibrancy. And I was looking for a place that had tremendous vibrancy.
Good stuff. Yeah, I hang out in Lauderdale sometimes when I'm not up in the Beantown.
Same thing. Yeah.
Los Olas Boulevard and those areas. And
yeah, you get it.
There's a lot of money there. Let me ask you, do you have like a certain avatar group that you go after?
It's in my book, actually, the certain avatar that we go after. There's 5 of them, and not all of them invest in everything. And if you go to investinglegacy.com/book, you'll see the hard copy book there. I can send you the autographed copy. I'll have to sign it if you want. And it's only available through that. If you get it through Amazon, I can't obviously autograph it. There's 5 of them. There's the provider, there's the documentarian, and it depends on the deals. We're going after venture deals. We're going after second generation people who are mostly looking to try to make a name for themselves. And these are people who are like, how do I exceed, the successes of my father? And in the book, there's actually a quote in there that I pull from a movie called Ford versus Ferrari. Has anyone seen the movie Ford versus Ferrari? There's a quote. To me, when I saw it, it was like, it totally epitomized and galvanized the reason for this book that I wrote. And it was basically Henry Ford Jr. just got his butt whipped by Ferrari. And Enzo Ferrari comes over and says in a very broken Italian English dialect, "You're Henry Ford Jr., not senior." And that was the kill shot, the linguistic kill shot that made him push Carroll Shelby to the edges to win Le Mans and all of that stuff. Because they're looking for legitimacy too, because their whole life, they feel as though I've never struggled. I never really developed. This is true stuff. And that's why they fall into drugs and things like that. And, succession is very true, especially in those levels, because I've seen that bullshit and it's actually very, it's eerily true. But, you got to go after people who, the older people are not going to go into venture deals. They're not going to go into crypto. They're going to go into real estate, right? And you got to really gauge it. The other ones, the documentarians and the providers, they're the ones who are the people who gravitate towards real estate. The other ones, the nonconformist, Bill Gates could be considered a nonconformist. The curator is a woman, think of a power woman, like what's her name on House of Cards, who always wore the heels, no matter if she was in Lululemon or Louboutin. She was always very, very powerful. And, you know, that's like a curator. She loves art. She loves humanity. She loves things. She's her greatest art lender. She loves this stuff because she tells her friends she does it. And I know it. And I tell her we have another opening. She always puts more money into it. And then you have the people who are the moguls like me, who are like the first gens who, you know, who are like looking to build, make a name for themselves, right? They're not going to be so much into real estate, but they're going to be more into like building funds and everything. And if you're like building a fund and you're here, chances are you're a mogul, right? And that's explained in the book.
You mentioned real estate in the title itself, but you don't really strictly stick to real estate.
What do you mean in the title of what?
The title of your book. Doesn't it mention real estate?
No, I have two real estate books, the blue and the red. The white one does not mention a lot of real estate.
So how much, like percentage-wise, how much real estate do you deal with?
Right now, we have one Class A industrial building, and thankfully that's all we got. I'm a distressed real estate investor by training, and I'm waiting for everything to come to hell before I allocate capital into it yet.
And what kind of skin do you have in the game, if people ask you?
That's interesting. I do put a lot of my own money into these deals, especially the venture deals, but also I'm at the point now where I don't need to do that because people know that I've spent probably about $1 million setting this whole thing up between the legal documents with Perkins Coie and the relationships and the ability for them to get in the deals, and they've already seen success. So if I'm going in to raise money, I don't have to put anything into it, although I have my own issues that I, you know, cash issues that I want to invest it into it. So it's just a matter of where I am at that point.
Okay, so most of us here are real estate. Like, do you think we should get into alternative assets because of the way that...
I definitely think you should get into alternative assets at some point, because if you're raising money, remember, real estate to me is cyclical. I got into it because I got into alternatives and venture because I had a very large network that I could lever and I could pivot that way. A lot of people can't. We do have a venture capital intensive coming up on the 15th and the 16th of June. We hosted at a prestigious law firm here in Miami, just like we did the last one. But one of the things I will tell you is that your first job should be learning how to raise capital, and second job deploying it. Does that make sense, Kevin?
Yeah.
And if you're raising money for other people who are smarter than you, you're going to be much better off ahead. You're going to work faster too. You're going to see success faster.
I'm looking at the baby boomers because there's a ton of money there, right? So
they want real estate. They want coupons every quarter. And here's another sense of urgency. Tell them when they're getting paid. If they're getting paid quarterly, that's better than, you know, annually. Set up NAV consulting so that there's certainty that they can log in and see their account.
Thank you.
And you got it.
I don't want to take up all the time.
No, that's okay. I got a couple more minutes left. I am getting blown up right now for people I'm supposed to be seeing.
This will be it. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they're scaling?
Be evangelical about what it is that you're doing. Everybody's met a CrossFit or a vegan. It was the first thing that they hear. Oh, this is how great it is. Talk to them about your views of the real estate market, why you think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of opportunity, why you haven't done anything yet. Maybe you haven't done anything yet because you're scared, you're inexperienced, but tell them you're waiting for real distress to come. Start talking to them, start forming a narrative with them. And by all means, make sure that you have a website up to make sure that tells people what you do, because people are always going to go to your website and they're always going to check you out on LinkedIn. Do your housework first. LinkedIn is very, very, everybody's on LinkedIn today. You know, not everybody's on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but you know, if you're spending more time on TikTok than, you know, LinkedIn or something, I'm always posting shit on LinkedIn all the time because I want to attract that attention. And that's the same thing you should be doing.
Good stuff. Get on Salvatore's email list, guys. It's pretty good stuff on there. He's got a State of the Union that he distributes I think once a year. So really good stuff.
Now, once a quarter. Yeah. Anybody who buys the book and I get the response, if you go to salvatorebuscemi.com books, I get a receipt and I'll reply to it with the State of the Union. I won't do it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. The State of the Union and the Class A industrial deal. And if you make a note to remind me of this, I won't forget. And I'll also put you into I'll also onboard, because this is learning about raising capital, I'll onboard you onto our HRN family office as if you just wrote a check for $1 million. And this is the emails that you'll get from me. Does that make sense? Is that cool?
Phenomenal. Yeah, that's great, man.
Great stuff, man.
You get the same stuff Ruben gets, all right? So this is really cool. All right, guys, this has been great. I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for your time. I hope I didn't waste your time and I didn't drift off too much, but I think you guys are pretty well equipped now to take over the world, don't you think?
Every day we're getting stronger.
You got it, guys. All right, I appreciate your time. Thank you. Take care. That was awesome. Yeah.
legacy acquisitions,